Today's daf is Lamed, Bechorot Lamed. We're going to start at the Mishnah, two Mishnayot from the end of Kaftet Amud Bet at the bottom. HaChashud al HaShvi'it, remember we were talking about people who don't do certain things. Okay, right. The question is, if they don't do, like the last time Mishnah was HaChashud al HaBechorot, okay, it was HaChashud in some way, we had a debate about what it was. Now we have someone who's chashud on shvi'it, okay? Either that they plant on the Shemitah year or they sell stuff from the Shemitah, the produce. Ein lochim imenu pishtan. You can't buy flax from him, even though flax, you would say, doesn't have shvi'it because it's not food. However, you still can't buy pishtan from him. And there's a few reasons given. One reason, the Yerushalmi actually gives two opinions here. One is that you can eat flax seeds, right? If you go to a health food store, right, it's big now, everybody eats flax seeds. Not everybody, but people eat them. So since you can eat the seeds, so therefore they do have kedushat shvi'it. Some people say it's just a knas. Okay, the Yerushalmi gives those two opinions that it's not really a stormy karadim, but they would penalize them. In other words, that once you're chashan on shvi, we're penalizing you that no one can buy even pishtam from you, even though it's not really food. Vafilu serek, even if they combed it. Okay, why combed it? This goes back to the previous Mishnah with the skins, when they tanned them, what did we say? Since they already put in so much effort, it must be that it's not a bechor because they wouldn't risk it. Because if somebody found out, they'd have to throw out and waste all their, you know, it's one thing to sell the item, but to start producing something from the item. So here they're going to distinguish between combing, which is not a lot of work to comb the flax, aval, and therefore since it's not a lot of work, you still can't purchase it because maybe he really combed it even though it's shvi'it, aval lochim mehem, but you can if it's threaded or if they spun it into thread or it's embroidered or I don't know exactly the translation. We're going to see in a minute exactly what they mean by arig. So the Gemara says, like in the previous Mishnah, hashta tvisav ninan, if you can sell it once it's spun, arig mebaya, right? Don't you embroider it or sew it with something that's spun? My arig techi. They say no, arig is techi, which is it's when you weave it into chains, but it's not actually spun. Okay? Tov. HaChashud liot mocher truma. L'shem. Okay, it should say liot mocher truma. I'm just looking in the L'shem chulin. Okay, if you sell truma as chulin, meaning masked it as chulin, again, this is someone who's chashud. What do you see here? The whole theme of today's daf is how do we know when we go to a store that the guy's legit, right? How do we know that we can buy stuff? This is a constant problem, right? How can the person be trusted, right? We have two dot kashrut now to resolve that issue. Unfortunately, doesn't always resolve the issue because just because someone has a tuda doesn't necessarily mean that everything's okay. And likewise, if they don't, it doesn't mean everything's not okay, right? We all know that two dot kashrut are not always so, not everything's so yashar sham. But in general, right, that's the whole issue. Or sometimes you have a place that has a tuda kashrut and then all of a sudden you find out, right, there was this famous pizza place where I was living in Jerusalem years ago, where on the seventh day of Pesach, you know, someone happened to be passing by and saw them, it was, you know, kneading the dough, getting ready for post-Pesach. So, you know, then somehow magically 2 months later it had their tuda back, you know, but we weren't really going back there. So that's exactly what's going on here. How do you know that you can buy these items? So if someone's chashud, that he's mocher truma l'shem chulin, right, that you know that at some point, right, there's also debate about, you know, okay, you saw him do it once, does that mean, right, probably this is somebody did it once, then already we lose confidence in them. So ein lochim imenu afilu mayim v'melach. You now can't purchase anything from him, even water, even salt, because we penalize him, even though water and salt you don't need to take truma to maaserot, so we're not worried that you're buying something that's truma, but since they were selling that, you know, masking it and tricking people, therefore you can't buy anything. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol sheyesh bo zikat truma umaaserot ein lochim imenu. It has to have some connection to truma to maaserot. Mayim v'melach, so far off from truma to maaserot. But we'll see in a second what he means according to the Gemara anyway. La tuye mai, what is he coming to include? La tuye kirbe dagim de ma'arbe behu shemen zayin. The innards of the fish, they would mix them with oil, and the oil could potentially have a truma or maaser issue, and therefore that's what you can't purchase. Hahu tabcha, there was a certain butcher, dava chashud libzvune tarba de itma, bimar de chanta. He was chashud that he was selling the chelev of the thigh, okay, but he was, which is forbidden, but he was masking it as if it was kosher chelev. Okay, remember, there's different parts, there's different fats, some are allowed, some are not allowed. So he was masking it as if it was the chelev of the klayot, of the kidneys. Kanse Rava lizvune afilu am gozen. So Rava penalized him that he couldn't even sell nuts. Now the nuts have absolutely nothing to do with selling forbidden chelev. So Amale Rapapa Rava, kiman, kirab Yehuda. What, are you penalizing him and not letting him sell nuts because of Rabbi Yehuda? Remember, the Mishnah, Machloket in the Mishnah was, if someone's chashud for selling truma and masking it as hulin, so are you allowed to buy nothing from him? Or, you know, you penalize, he can't sell anything. Or do you say only things that are connected? So they say, well, in this case, again, this isn't a truma case, but it was a case where the guy was selling forbidden fats of the animal, masking them as if they were kosher, right? You can imagine why it's easy to do this. How can you distinguish between the parts, right? Obviously, again, this is a case where only the owner of the store knows which fats are which. So he penalized him and said, you can't eat nuts. You can't sell nuts. So now the question is, well, if you want to say, Ki Rabbi Yehuda comes from a pup and he says, E Ki Rabbi Yehuda filo mayim v'melech nami, right? Then you wouldn't just say, you can't sell nuts. You would say, you can't sell anything. So, or you can't purchase anything from him. So, la'olam Rabbi Shimon, ubi sura de gufe kansinale. It really was Rabbi Shimon who says, only if it's connected. And actually, the nuts were connected. Here we're going to come with a very interesting story. And how are nuts connected to the forbidden fats? Stam dardike garu bam goza. He would take these little children that were the children of other butchers, and he would seduce them with nuts. Okay, this week comes up in Pesach, right? How you give the kids nuts to get them interested. Right, nowadays, most little kids aren't so interested in nuts, but those days that was like a big treat. I guess they didn't have potato chips and things like that.
Or bomba.
Right, or bomba. So, right, didn't have all those category of items. So therefore, it must have been nuts was the thing. So he enticed them with nuts. V'azel u'mashavish livnei tabache. V'gari lehubam. Oh, sorry. Okay, let's go back. I didn't read it. Stam dardike, a regular, first they're just telling you the facts, which is interesting. They're telling you this. That an average child, you can seduce with nuts. Okay, therefore they assume that's how the nuts are connected. Va'azalu mishabesh, and then he went and tricked libnei tabache, or not exactly tricked them, but he kind of played with them. V'gara lehubam goze, he seduced them with nuts. He says, I'll give you nuts if you, what? You go to your fathers who are butchers, umaite le tarba de itma. And you bring me, because what did they do with the fats? They probably threw them out. They had nothing to do with these fats. They couldn't sell them. So he said, I'll give you nuts if you go to your fathers and you bring me the forbidden fats, right? The stuff that he was going to throw out anyway, and you bring me that. So he seduced them with nuts in order to do that. Umazabin le bimar dechante. And then he hid it, you know, he kind of pretended that it was the permitted fats. And therefore, he was no longer permitted to sell nuts. That was the connection about how we got there. Definitely a creative interpretation here.
But okay. The Mishnah compared to the one before is very strict, as opposed to the leniency of the one with the Shemitah.
What are you saying? Sorry, I didn't follow. What are you connecting it to?
The first Mishnah that we read about how Chashud Allah should eat.
Yeah.
They were very lenient about it.
Well, they were lenient only once you did something to it.
Right.
In this case, you're selling the raw item. No, it's the same thing. It's saying, we don't allow you to sell, right, if you're... I think it's the same thing. It's only once you process it. The whole issue is, we don't trust you, so we don't trust you. However, there's one issue, which is if you start doing a whole procedure to it, you're not going to invest in something that people might actually find out about you. And therefore, once you process it, you have to say, not a little bit, but a lot, like tanning it or spinning the threads. Once you do that, then we already assume you would never invest so much in something that was forbidden. Okay? Which is an interesting theory, because you know, you could then take it and say the other way. I'll go process it because then I know. Like, if these people really know the halacha, that's always the tricky part about these things. They know the halacha, and they'll say, oh, I'll process it, and then they'll really never suspect me. So it's always a tricky part when you talk about who you're suspecting and all that. Ha-chashud, it's going to get even more interesting, this whole thing. Ha-chashud al-hashvi'i, reino chashud al-ha-masrot. Okay, so now the whole question is, if you're suspicious about, if we suspect you, we know you're not careful about one thing, does that mean you're not going to be careful about something else? So here we go with shvi'i, masrot, and tahavot. Okay, so shvi'i, right, that's about selling produce from the shmita year or planting it. If you're chashud about that, we don't trust you about that because you've done something wrong. Eino chashud al ha-masrot. We don't suspect you that you don't take masrot. Now you might think, oh, let's put all these things together, right? They're mitzvot liyot ba'aretz. Okay. So, no, not. We're going to see in the Gemara why not. Ha-chashud al ha-masrot, eino chashud al ha-shvi'i. These are two separate things. You're chashud on one, you're not going to be chashud on the other in either direction. Ha-chashud al ze va'al ze. If you're chashud, here it doesn't mean ve'al ze. Often ve means or. If you're chashud either for shvi'i or for masrot, then you will be chashud ala tarot. Then we're going to assume that you're not careful about tarot. Now, why? Because shmita and masrot are midoraita and taharot. What do we mean when we say taharot? This was when we talked about this many times, that the people in those times, the prushim, treated things al taharata kodesh. Okay, this is going to be a main topic today. They kind of took all their stuff, even if they weren't kohanim. They treated it as if they were kohanim and had to eat everything b'tahara. Right? And therefore, if that's already not asur midoraita, and therefore, if you're chashud on those, then we're assuming you're not going to be very careful about taharot. V'yeshu chashud ala taharot, and then also you could be chashud al taharot, ve'eino chashud lo al ze v'lo al ze. And the reverse, right, where you're suspicious that you're not careful about taharot, we know you're not careful about that, it doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to be careful about masrot and shmita, which makes sense, because that's more... Right? Again, something that's drabanan doesn't mean you're going to be over on a doraita. Zehaklal, there's a very strange line here because it's, what would you expect? You would expect to have some sort of klal, mm-hmm. right? Some sort of general rule here. But it doesn't really say that. And that you would expect, usually, this somewhat summarizes what we just read. And then the Gemara always says, well, what was that adding? Because you don't really need the summary line. Here it's actually a little different. Ha-chashud al davar lo dano v'lo mi'ido. If you're, this is actually teaching you something new about it. If you're chashud about something specific, then you can't be a judge in that type of situation, and you can't testify about that type of issue. Okay. In other words, if you're chashud ala shmita, you can't be a judge in a case about shmita, and you can't testify in a case of shmita. You have to wonder how we're letting you be a judge in general if you're, right, I didn't really look that up too much, but it's a seems a little strange that we, you know, it's saying you can't judge about that case, it sounds like, unless I'm misunderstanding it, but I assume that's what it's saying.
You don't judge him?
Ever? I assume, no, it's specifically that type of situation. Right, the Rambam has a bit of a different explanation here, I remember seeing, I just want to review what it is. Right, so the Rambam takes it to mean he can't judge in anything that's as serious as that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that would mean basically you could be a judge in the less serious case, like let's say you could be a judge in a Durabana case but not a Doraita case or something like that, but you can't be a judge in a serious case. That actually takes it more logically that
it also follows from what was previously said.
Exactly, right. So then, right, that's why it connects a little better with Zaklal, but I think I read also here that some people say that, yeah, there's two different nuschaot of the Perusha Mishnah of the Rambam, and one of those, this is erased. So it's an interesting... Okay. My time. So now what's the reason about Shvi'i and Masro, one not being connected with the other? And we're basically going to say that each one has a particular chumrah to it. So if each one has a particular chumrah, the fact that somebody doesn't keep it might not necessarily mean he wouldn't keep something else. He might not keep that one because it's hard for him in the particular way that that's difficult. Whereas the other one has a different difficulty, and maybe that wouldn't bother him. It's interesting in terms of, right, we're all motivated by, you know, something might be easy for me and harder for you. And so, my time, a shvi'i lo ba'ya choma Maser kevan debay choma chamir le shvit doesn't need to be eaten in the walls of Yerushalayim, but maser does. So because maser needs to be eaten in the walls of Yerushalayim, right? We're talking about maser sheni here. Therefore, it's more chamor. Maybe it's, you know, that person lives farther away from Jerusalem, so it's harder for him to get there, or he's not easy for him to travel. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they'll be suspicious when it comes. They'll be suspect when it comes to shvit. Hachashur ala maser, so now he won't be chashur ala shvit, my taima. Maser it le pidyon. Shvit, kevan de kamitzare le, vele le pidyon, chamira le. So now they're going to say, maser you can redeem. But shvit, once it's forbidden, it's forbidden. There's no way to redeem it. So therefore, also that has its own chumra, that therefore wouldn't connect with maser. Hachashur al ze ve al ze. So now you're chashur on Taharot, right? If you're chashud al zeb, you're not chashud, I'm sorry, you're chashud specifically, you would be chashud about Taharot. We're assuming you won't keep them. Why? Kevan de chashud adoraita, kol shakena de rabbanan, right? Since you're suspect, you're not going to be doing something deoraita, we assume for sure you won't be doing something derabbanan. But yesh chashud al taharot, my time. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean you for sure aren't, but it means we can't trust you anymore. This goes back to, I always reference this sugya because I was finding one of the most interesting sugyas of Shas about, and it really connects with the issue here in Sanhedrin. When we talked about psule edut, we talked about if somebody does something wrong, they make some psule edut, at what point can we accept him back and accept his testimony? Like if he does tshuva, and it's like a big central thing in tshuva, there's tshuva klape God, and then there's tshuva klape the community. Right, because the community needs to rebuild their trust. And it could be that as much, you know, obviously if right, the community has no idea what's going on in somebody's head and whether they've really committed, they've really done tshuva or not. And this is very relevant in, you know, all the time in our communities, particularly when it comes to sexual abuse, right? People say, oh, he's, you know, all better, doesn't do it anymore, you know, and many other people say, well, you know, that's not really been proven and how do we know? And it's a big question as a community. How do you know? So this is, it's the exact thing here. Just because someone does something wrong, how do you know they're going to do something else wrong? And sometimes as a community, you need a higher standard. So even though it doesn't necessarily mean this guy doesn't keep Taro, but since we know he already doesn't do one thing, if we want to trust, you know, it's hard to build trust of a community when you don't really know.
It's a little bit like when you go to a restaurant and they say, we're kosher, we're kosher, we're kosher, we just open on Shabbat.
Right. Right. So it's very similar because here they're open on Shabbat. So now they're already mechalel Shabbat. So, you know, then maybe they would be mechalel kashrut, right? You don't, or not mechalel, but, you know, they wouldn't keep kashrut. So that's, like, that's exactly what, that's what we call, we say ne'manut, right? Erecha ne'man bisurim. You can trust a person who's kosher, but he has to be kosher aid to be able to do that, which means he keeps mitzvot. So, right, it's very similar. So, v'yesh chashur ala tarot. So my time, huh? So now they say, okay, if you're chashur ala tarot, then you're going to be chashur on shvi'it and masrot. You're not going to be, right? Because if you're chashur ala tarot, then you're not going to be chashur for other things, because tarot, not everybody is so careful about tarot. So my time, nihida ad rabbanon chashid, adoraita lo chashid, right? So we're assuming, what's the reason? Since you're chashid to not do a derabbanon, it doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to do a doraita. Uriminhi. But now we have a source that contradicts. Ne'eman ala tarot, ne'eman ala shvi'it. Okay, if you're ne'eman for tarot, you're ne'eman al shvi'it. So now the assumption is, if you take this line, what are we going to assume? Ha chashid chashid. If you're trustworthy for tarot, you'll be trustworthy for shvi'it. Therefore, we're going to assume that if you're chashud for tarot, you're going to be chashud for shvi'it. And that seems to contradict what our Mishnah says. So even though it's not direct, it's not so logical. It's not, but you know, the Gemara sometimes has its own logic about how they read things. Maybe because it didn't say the reverse. It didn't say, but if you're chashud, you're not. Maybe because it didn't, it should have, if it really had this distinction, it would have specified that. So maybe that's why they think that. So now, Amar Rabbi Eli, matnitin kishira'inu shenoheg betzina betoch beto. Our Mishnah must be when they see that he's careful in his house, and therefore, right, in this case we're saying, when it says you're not chashud, it's because we see him doing shmita or masrot in his house. Okay, so if somebody that's here, we're going to assume that there's something that we didn't know about, which is when it says if you're not trustworthy for Tarot, you will be trustworthy for Truma or Shvit, it's only because somebody saw him actually, you know, treating Shvit produce with Kedusha or something like that, or taking Truma to Maser. Rabbi Yanai b'Rabbi Yishmael amar, ki gon da'avachashud l'travayu. So he has a different explanation. He says it's a case where he was chashud. Okay, when now he's talking about, this was, Rabbi Eli said, our Mishnah is in a different case. He's going to come say the Braita is in a unique case. What's the case of the Braita where you're either, right, you're either trusted for both or not trusted for both, and they go hand in hand. What's the case? It was a case where you were chashud l'travayu. Here comes the Gemara in Sanhedrin about, we'll see. You were originally, people suspected you of both. Va'ata kame rabbana, and he went before the rabbis, v'kabi ala travayu, and he said to the rabbis, okay, this is classic, right, if you think about sexual abuse. He came before the rabbis, and he pleaded his case, and he said, I've done tshuva. I am going to be very careful about this. Okay? Then what happened? But then, all of a sudden, you see him not being careful about one. So the guy came before the rabbis and he said, I promise I'm going to keep Tarot and I'm going to keep Truma to Masrot. And then all of a sudden, somebody saw him not keeping Tarot. So now do we say, we're now going to say, well, since he was chashed in the beginning, and then, right, this is not the case of a regular person that maybe has our trust, right? We're going to assume we trust you until proven otherwise. That's the assumption of the sugya, really, which is unless we know something, we'll assume you're being honest. But as soon as you show you're being dishonest, right, then we don't trust you. If you then start being honest again and then break our trust, well then, since you already were not trustworthy to begin with, we're not going to trust you in either case.
Probation.
What? Probation, right. It's like probation. It's such an interesting sugya. There's so much you could do with this. Okay. So now, Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Zo divrei Rabbi Akiva Stimta'a. Okay, this is what we read is that you're chashud al shvit, our Mishnah. You're chashud al shvit, you're not chashud al maaser. Okay, now we're going back to the earlier case. Okay, the fact that you're chashud al shvit doesn't make you chashud al maaser. Is divrei Rabbi Akiva. But Chachamim omrim, chashur ala shvid, chashur ala maaser. Chachamim view these things as going hand in hand. Man Chachamim, who are these Chachamim? Rabbi Yehuda. Deba'atra de Rabbi Yehuda, shvid chamira lehu. Okay? In the place of Rabbi Yehuda, they were very makpid on shvid, and therefore, or chamira lehu, right, they mean here that they took it, right, to explain it, that they're, second, right, they treated it very seriously, so I'm trying to think. So if you're chashed on shvi'it, no, but then it would be the reverse, right? Chashed ala shvi, chashed ala maaser. So just because you're chashed on shvi'it, right, that's the way it is. Because people treated it as if this is so important, that's what it means by chamir here. People treated Shemitah as if this is such an important mitzvah. So if you were chashud that you didn't keep Shvit, we're assuming you didn't keep Masra, okay? How do we know that in the place that Rabbi Yehuda lived, Shemitah chamir alehu? So here we're going to have a story. Dahuda v'karele l'chavre dayara bat dayarta. There was a person in the place where Rabbi Yehuda lived, who called someone as an insult, okay? You're a ger, the son of a gioret. Amarle, so the person's response was, in order to, you know, get back at the other guy, he said, titi li delo achil perot shvid kavatech. He said, I should get rewarded because I don't eat shmita produce like you do, okay? Which was like the ultimate insult. Right, it's like saying, right, nowadays you'd say, you know, you don't eat in a kosher place or something, right? In other words, that was, right, the basics, right? Those are the basics. So if you don't keep the basics, which is Shemitah, then obviously you're not keeping other things. Ika de Amre, some people have a whole different version of this, okay, that we started with Rabbi Rabbanah said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that the line, chashud ala shvid, chashud ala maaser, chashud ala shvid, eno chashud ala maaser is only Rabbi Akiva, But Rabbi Yehuda would say, right, Chachamim, who actually is Rabbi Yehuda, would say, Chashud al Hashvi is Chashud al Maasrot. The second version is, Amar Rabbi Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Zo Dvei Rabbi Chiva Stimta'a, Aval Chachamim Omrim, Chashud al Maasr, Chashud al Hashvi, the reverse. Okay, that if you're Chashud al Maasr, then you're going to be Chashud al Hashvi. Uman Chachamim, and who is this? This time it can't be Rabbi Yehuda. It's Rabbi Meir. Damar Chashud l'davar achad, Havi Chashud l'chol haTorah kula. Here's a different approach. That was to say, if you're Chashud on the main mitzvah, which they called Shemitah, then you're going to be Chashud on everything else. Here they're going to say, Rabbi Meir's opinion is, once you're Chashud on one mitzvah, we're going to be Choshed you b'chol haTorah kula.
So
that's
in directions.
Right, it would go then in every direction. Rabbi Yonav, Rabbi Yirmiyah, Talmidei Rabbi Zera. Okay, so either Rabbi Yonah, Rabbi Zera, the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Zera, or it was Rabbi Yonah, Rabbi Zera, the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan. Chad Amar, so they had a debate between the two of them. Again, not clear who the debate was between. Aval Chachamim Omrim, Chashur al Hashvit, Chashur al Maaser, Uman Chachamim, Rabbi Yehuda. This is the exact same thing, okay? The both of them had this discussion. And again, one of them said, Chashur al Hashvit is Chashur al Maaser, and then Chachamim would be Rabbi Yehuda, as we said. V'chan Amar Chashur al Maaser, Chashur al Hashvit, Uman Chachamim, Rabbi Meir. Okay, same exact debate between them as we saw between the two versions of what Rabbi Chana said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. How do we know of Rabbi Meir? D'etanya, Ama'aret shekibel alav divrei chaverut. Now we're going to get into a whole thing about divrei chaverut. Before we continue, I'm going to give a little background. What is chaverut? We've seen this term before in the Gemara about a chaver versus an ama'aretz. So a chaver, we're going to learn today, was kind of like a club. Okay, I didn't do enough research into this. You're welcome to do your own research to figure out exactly what the history here is about this issue of being a chaver, and we're going to learn, we'll learn some of the history through the eyes of the Gemara here, about that there was this club that you kind of had to be accepted into in a particular way. And there's going to be a whole interesting thing later on in the Dabba, how you get into the club and in what way. Some people say the chaverim really means, it means like, right, comes from friends, and it means a Torah scholar, basically. That's one way of reading it. It's a Torah scholar. And the reason they call it friends is because, like, Torah scholars that learn together, it's chaverut l'shem shamayim, which, you know, you can see when you learn with a chavruta, right? There's a certain relationship that's developed. Other people say that it's chaverim because they kind of separate. This is very interesting, right? Because you would think chaverim not separated. They separate from the rest of the community, and they're super makpid on taharot. That's what we're going to see here from the sugya, that it's very much taharot related. All the sugya we were talking about taharot, they keep taharot at a very high level. What? Why then chaver? Because they can connect with the people who are very careful, and the people who are very stringent kind of keep away from everyone. So these people can be part of that chevra, so to speak, right? They can be mitchaver with those people, so they become called a chaver. Okay, so now, let's go back to what this braita says. In Ama Aretz that accepts upon himself divrei chaverut. Okay, so he accepts to be a chaver, part of this club, even though Ama Aretz are like the exact opposite, but this guy decided, okay, I want to put myself there. You know, maybe you call it a chozer b'tshuva. B'nechshad l'davar achad, but then he becomes suspicious, right? Someone sees him not being careful about something. Nechshad l'kol haTorah kula, divrei Rabbi Meir. Okay? This is someone who kind of, you know, takes on all these things, but then all of a sudden, it's chashud about one thing, Rabbi Meir says it's chashud about everything. V'chachamim omrim, eino nechshad ele lo to davar bilvad. He's only, right, not trusted in that particular area. It's fascinating to think about, you know, how we view people. Do we err on the side of being more trustworthy? Do we err on the side of not? If someone changes, how do we view them? You know, do we assume they're going to go back to where they were from or not? Hager shekibel alav divrei Torah. This is the obvious next one, right? Not just an Amaretz who becomes a chaver, but a ger that takes upon the Torah. Afilu nechshav ledavar achad, have chashud lechol haTorah kula. Even if he's nechshav for one thing, we're going to be choshedim lechol haTorah kula. V'harehu ki Yisrael mumar. This is very interesting. We don't say he reverts back to being a non-Jew. Now, this is right. What happens? He kind of became a Jew, but now we see he's not keeping the Torah. So we don't say he's not a Jew anymore. We treat him as a Yisrael Mumar. Treat him as a Jew who doesn't, you know, kind of left the keeping mitzvot. Nafkamina, what's the nafkamina? Whether we treat him as Yisrael Mumar or as a non-Jew. Di'i kadish, kiddushav kiddushin. That his kiddushin will be tofes. If he betroths a woman, he'll be betrothed to her, right? It will be a kosher kiddushin because he's viewed as a Jew.
It's incredibly
unforgiving. Yes, it's very unforgiving. And here I'm going to give you one of the most relevant nafkaminas of this halacha about this. About the first part of the statement, that if he's nechshav l'davar achad, he's chashul l'kol haTorah kula, which is a kohen wants to marry a giyoret. Okay? So the giyoret, she wants to convert. Well, let's say, not, right, she wants to convert to marry a kohen. So now she wants to convert, or even, let's say she's converted already. So now she says, but I'm willing to keep all the mitzvot, except that she wants to marry a kohen, which is not a mitzvah, huh. Right? Which is going against a mitzvah. So it's a paradox. And this comes up all the time.
But isn't his mitzvah not to marry your Isor?
Well, she's going against a mitzvah. Is it on him? It's viewed on, you know, she shouldn't be doing it. Again, Giyoret Bichlal doesn't say in the Torah, but the assumption is she's a Zonah, which that says in the Torah. So, yeah, no, that's like, because, you know, the assumption is until she was Jewish, she must have been sleeping around. So it's a very big issue. They try to resolve it in different ways, either by saying he's not, you know, maybe his Chezka Kahuna is problematic, or, you know, or maybe she's Jewish, actually. Maybe she has Jewish roots, and maybe she's something Jewish. But that's a very big issue that comes up very often. So, okay, that's enough coming of this. Tana Rabbanan, habala kabel divrei chaverut chutz mi davar echad ein mekablim oto. Okay, someone who wants to be part of this chaverut club, but he says, right, which is, let's say, keep, and again, a lot of it has to do with the keeping tuma and tara stuff, but he says, I'm not keeping one aspect of it, ein mekablim oto. Okay, you can't. Oveh kochavim, they're comparing here, they're, you know, there's chaverut and there's coming into, you know, to become a Jew, like a convert. Right, this is actually the Giyoret thing, if she's actually converting at that time. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu dikduk echad midivrei sofrim. Okay, he goes so far as to say, even if they're not willing to keep one element of divrei sofrim, then you can't accept them. V'chein ben Levi, sheba lekabel divrei leviyah. Okay, the Leviim who come to accept upon themselves the role of the Levi, the singing and the things that they did. V'kohen sheba lekabel divrei kuhuna, chutz midavar achad. Okay, again, if they say, I'll do all these things, but not for, the you know, certain things. Ein mekablin oto, shenemar, right? We can't accept him to do the avoda. Okay, this is interesting, because it's not like a kohen or a Levi joined the club, they're born into it. But here we see, okay, according to this source, again, I don't think this is the only source, but you can have him do the job if he's not willing to do everything. Shenemar, hamakriv et amashlamim, ha'avoda ha'misura lebnei Aaron. Kol kohen she'eino modeh bo, ein lo chelek b'kuhuna. Okay, how did they get this from the pasuk? It's probably the whole pasuk that's important here. It says, hamakriv et damashlamim ve'et ha'chelev mibnei Aharon lo tiyeh. So they say, it's the avodah mesura livnei Aharon, okay, and therefore you have to accept all the avodah, otherwise you don't have chelev b'kuna. How do you get it from bnei Aharon? They say bnei Aharon is unnecessary, and they get it from there. Okay. Where are we? Habal kabelt, okay. Tanu Rabbanan, habal kabel divrei chaverut. Im reinu shenoheg b'tzina b'toch b'eto, mekablin oto. V'achar kach melamdim oto. V'im lav melamdim oto v'achar kach mekablin oto. Someone comes to be a chaver, we have to kind of check him out. Right? This is classic, right? You want to go live in a particular yeshuv. It's like a committee of people that sit and check, you know, who you are. So you want to be a chaver. So if they see people already saw you in your own house, you know, they happen to come into your house and they saw you were careful about tarot, then they accept you, and then they teach you whatever they think, you know, you might still need to know. But if not, if no one knows, nobody knows really about you, who you are, first they're going to teach you, and only after that will they accept you into the club. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai omer, ben kach uben kach mekablim oto, v'hula mei kedarko v'holech. It's actually interesting that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says this, because he's actually very kana'i in general. But he actually says, in this case, you accept him, and Toch Kedei is going to learn how it goes. Tana Rabbanan, mekablim liknafayim, v'achar kach mekablim l'taharot. Okay, we're going to have all these brightot about the process of accepting a chaver. Okay, this is going to take us till past the end of this stuff. Knafayim, they say, is nitilat yadayim. Okay, why knafayim? So some people say, because, you know, some people hold their hands up after they nitilat yadayim, so it looks like you have wings. Okay, so that's why they say it's knafayim. First, you accept them for nitilat yadayim. You see that they're careful about that. And after that, you can accept them for taharot, okay? Because one is, you know, do you wash your hands before you touch anything? The other is, you know, are you careful about all your taharot? V'mamar eini mekabel ela l'knafayim mikablin oto. Okay, but if he says, I'm only accepting that, so you can accept him for knafayim. He says, listen, I'm makpid on nitilat yadayim, but I'm not makpid on all the taharot. Kibel a tarot, but lo kibel in a knafayim, off the tarot lo kibel. But since nitilat yadayim is considered something simpler, if he's only accepting tarot or not nitilat yadayim, we don't accept him even for tarot. Tana rabbanan, ad kama mekablinoto. How long does it take after he joins the club for you to be able to trust his tarot? Okay, you see how careful they were. They, right, I was thinking this is like a waiting period when you go into Kupach Olim and you want to get like, right, you have a 30-day waiting period or a 60, you know, 6 months till you can get this benefit or 12 months till you can get that benefit. So here they say, you come into the club, well, we can't accept your stuff right away. Beit Shammai Omrim, limashkin, for your liquids, to make sure, right, that I can drink your liquids, shloshim yom, 30 days. Lichsut, to make sure that your clothes and things you touch aren't tmeim, 12 chodesh, 12-month waiting period. Ubeit Hillel Omer, echadzev yechadzev l'shneimasar chodesh. Both of them, you have to wait 12 months. Then they say, what do you mean? Im ken havele mikule Beit Shammai and l'chumer Beit Hillel. This isn't on the list. Here you see Beit Shammai is more meikel, because he says 30 days for drinks. Ela Beit Hillel Omer, echadzev yechadzev l'shloshim. Okay, so then they say, it must be a mistake. Beit Hillel must say, both of them, 30 days, whereas Beit Shammai says 30 days for drinks and a year for ksut. Okay. Now we're going to have a whole slew of braita. Tana Rabbanan, the simanim are for each braita. Habal kabel divrei chaveru, tzarich lekabel bifnei shlosha chaverim. Okay, this now gets into a whole other interesting issue. When you go to take upon chaverut, you do it before three people, like typical beitin, right? You find three people and you say it in front of, but it has to be three chaverim. Ubanav ubnei beito, einan tzrichim lekabel bifnei shlosha chaverim. Here's the interesting part. What can we assume about your family, right? This is classic. Can you assume the children follow their parents? So they say, if the father's a chaver, then the whole family is chaverim. Okay, they don't have to do any sort of formal acceptance. You're part of the community already. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Af banav ubnei beito tzrichim lekabel bifnei shlosha chaverim. Lefi she'eino domeh chaver shekibel lebein chaver shekibel. Right? We all know kids don't always follow in the way of their parents. And what?
It depends what age of the children.
Well, I assume they're not talking about ketanim. Ketanim, anyway, they probably wouldn't trust their tarot, you know, and then, you know, if they touch, I don't know, or I guess at that point you assume that, but when the child, you know, just, this is classic, right? Getting into college, okay, or army unit sometimes, right? These things go by, you know, if your father was in the unit or your mother was in the university or they'll accept you much more likely. They'll assume you're like, right, there's a legacy. On the other hand, the second opinion says, what do you mean? Just because one is that way doesn't mean the other one's that way. And just because, and they're even saying more so. I like the way he words it. Eino dome chaver shekibel. Someone who comes into the club, he obviously gave it a lot of thought and said, oh, this is a club I want to be part of. Someone who didn't accept it, he never went through a formal process of acceptance. So he's not going to be the same as the person who accepted it. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. We're going to get back to this point also later. Habal kabel divrei chaverut, tzarich lekabel bifnei shlosha chaverim. Vafilu tamid chacham tzarich lekabel bifnei shlosha chaverim. Just because you're a tamid chacham doesn't mean you're part of this chaver chevra. You also have to do a formal acceptance policy. We're going to see different opinions about this. But a zaken v'yoshev v'yeshiva, here we get to different opinions. There's a tamid chacham, and then there's a zaken v'yoshev v'yeshiva. He's a no tzarich lekabel bifnei shlosha, because the assumption is he's already, by sitting, learning all the time, and because it's a zaken, again, it's very hard to figure out what's the distinction between tamid chacham and a zaken v'yoshev b'yeshiva, he already doesn't need to. Bifnei shlosha chaverim, why? Shekvar kibel alav misha'a sheyashav. Just by coming in to sit, so here, they mean to sit, 1 second, right, that's what it is. Yeah, okay. So because he sits on the Sanhedrin himself, of course, if you're going to sit on the Sanhedrin, you're trustworthy when it comes to your Taharot. That's the difference between the Tamid Chacham and the, thank you for reminding me, and the Zaken V'Yoshev Yeshiva. Abba Shaul Omer, Av Talmid Chacham Eino Tzarich Lechaver B'fnei Shlosha Chavirim. Okay, he disagrees about the Talmid Chacham. He says, of course the Talmid Chacham doesn't need to. This goes back to saying, maybe Chaver really means Talmid Chacham, right? It's kind of being part of that. V'lod Ela, Shacharim Mekablim Lefanav. What do you mean? We use the Talmidei Chachamim to sit on the Beit Din, to accept Chavirim into the club. How could you have someone accepting people into the club if they themselves aren't automatically accepted into the club? So therefore, that's his proof that it must be that they're accepted into the club without having some formal acceptance. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, B'imei B'noshah Rabbi Chanina Ben Antiginus Nishnet Mishnah Zo. Okay, the following Mishnah that we're going to say right now was taught in the time of Chanina Ben Antiginus. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, istepik lehu milta b'tarot. They were unsure about some issue in the Mishnayot of Tarot, a halacha about Tarot. Shadru Rabbanan legabe b'nosha Rabbi Chanina ben Tuginus. Okay, they sent messengers, these two messengers, to the house of Rabbi Chanina ben, to the house of the son of Rabbi Chanina ben Tuginus, to find out. It's interesting they won't say his name, right? He's just called the son of Rabbi Chanina ben Tuginus, in order to find out what the halacha was. Azilu amrele la'ayem be. So they sent him and they said, go, you know, find out. Eshkechu de katayin tarot. So now when they got there, they saw he was busy dealing with his taharot. Okay, there's a play here between the laws of taharot versus he was actually dealing with things of, you know, of taharot. Otiv rabbana midide legabayu vikai iu li'iyune be. So they came before him. Otiv Rabbana Midide Legabayu means he took rabbis from his own school and he gave them his taharot to hold while he was going to open the books to check out what he should do. Bekayu li yunebe, right? Then he went up to go look into it. So now they were very insulted because what could he have easily done? Instead of going to get his own rabbis, he could have given them the taharot, but he didn't. Why? They assumed he must suspect us that we don't keep taharot carefully. So Amrele the Rabbi Yehuda of Rabbi Yossi. So the messengers go back and tell Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, Amar lehu. So they said what happened. So what's Rabbi Yehuda's immediate reaction? Amar lehu Rabbi Yehuda, Aviv shalze bizat tamidei chachamim, af hu mevazet tamidei chachamim. He says, what an embarrassment this son of Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus was. Maybe this is why he's spoken as the son of, because they say his father embarrassed tamidei chachamim. And that's why he embarrasses Talmidei Chachamim. And they were basically, he was very upset that he wouldn't let them touch his taharot. It was a bizayon. So first of all, what does his father have anything to do with this? It doesn't seem like Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus was disrespectful to Talmidei Chachamim. This goes back to some sugi we saw a long time ago about how if the son, right, that the son is a reflection on the parents. And this goes back to the previous sugya about, do we assume sons follow in their parents' footsteps or that they have their own, right? And this is Dafka saying, if a son is disrespectful, it must be the parent didn't treat him the proper respect. He must have been disrespectful. Amarlo Rabbi Yossi, kvod zaken yehei munach bimkomo. Don't disrespect his father. Ela miyom shacharav beit hamikdash, nahagu kohanim silsul ba'atzmam she'em mosrim et ha'tarot l'chol adam. Now we learn that he was a kohen. And the kohanim, Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus was kohen, so was his son. Kohanim were very super makpid on this, and that's why. And it doesn't have to do, don't think he was disrespecting you. It's just the end of, once the, and this is also really interesting, so many things here, we don't have enough time, but this line that miyom shachara beit hamikdash, and that after the beit hamikdash was destroyed, they were more careful. You would think when the beit hamikdash is around, that's when everyone's going to be super careful. But dafka, when the beit hamikdash was destroyed, they felt if we don't keep up, it's going to be the end of Tarot in general, like nowadays, right? We have no Tumantara. So because of that, they're super careful and don't view what he did as insulting you, but that's just the way it is. Okay, we'll try to read it a little quickly through the rest. Tana Rabbanan, Chaver Shemet Ishto Banav Ubnei Beito. This is also fascinating. Harein Bechez Katan Ad Shiach Shadu. Okay, here's an approach that we do trust the family. If the father dies, so if he was part of the family, the Chaverut, right, they'll be also, unless they do something to break the trust. V'chein chatzer shemachrim b'tchelet, harei b'chezkata ad shetipasel. We can assume if they sell tchelet that they're selling the legit thing. Remember, there was always this chashash that they were selling kale ilan that looks like tchelet. So we're going to assume trust until proven otherwise. New Brita. You can see there's different approaches in the Brita. Do we trust the family? Do we not trust the family? Tana Rabbanan. Eshet Ama Aretz and Yisei L'chaver. Here, to me, this is one of the most interesting. The woman of someone who's an Ama Aretz. And then either they get divorced or he dies. Then she marries a Chaver. V'chein bitol shel am ha'aretz sheniseit l'chaver, or the daughter of an am ha'aretz that gets married to a chaver. V'chein avdo shel am ha'aretz shenimka l'chaver, right? They started off in a less good place. They moved to a better place. Kulan tzrichim l'kabel divrei chaveru b'tchila. When they join the new family, they have to take upon themselves the vow of chaverut. Aval eshet chaver sheniseit l'am ha'aretz, v'chein bitol shel chaver sheniseit l'am ha'aretz, v'chein avdo shel chaver shenimkar l'am ha'aretz, ein tzrichim l'kabel divrei chaveru b'tchila. This is fascinating. A woman who goes the other direction, first she was married to a chaver, then she goes to marry an amaretz, or the daughter, or the eved, because the eved was b'nei beito, don't need to accept divrei chaverut. We assume, even though they're now married to an amaretz, that they're keeping with their original stuff. It's really interesting. But comes the other opinion. Rabbi Meir Omer, akhem tzrichim l'kabel em divrei chaverut l'chatchila. And here's the big clincher line. Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir. Okay? And as Rabbi Meir said, once they move to the amaretz's house, they've got to redo their vows if they want to be accepted. And here comes the story that they tell in the name of Rabbi Meir to prove this. She would help him wrap his tefillin, okay, which the Mepharshim will go off on this. Just say a woman can help her, you know, wrap tefillin of her husband and blah, blah, blah. This whole issue about this. Okay, again, we ran out of time, but you can go look it up. And then niseh lam aretz vayta kosheret lo kishrei moches al yado. She would tie the ties of the moches, the tax collector. In other words, the tax collector was viewed as like the absolute worst guy. If you remember, going back to Sanhedrin again, this whole suga connects to Sanhedrin, that they were the ones who aren't, you can't trust them to be a witness because they had the power of the king to determine who they accepted taxes from, and they would take double tax. You know, they weren't trusted when it came to money. And she basically helped him. You know, she helped the first husband mikayim mitzvot, and she helped the other husband be a thief, basically, and take money from other people. So here you see, right? It's an interesting image about the kosher tefillin. You know, it's interesting how the rabbis make a whole halachic issue about this tefillin issue. To me, it looks like they don't really mean that she was physically, but whether she was or not, it doesn't really matter. The point is, you know, it's also, she was time. I mean, the Mepharshim explained, what does it mean, kishrei moches? Rashi says there were these chotamot that they would put on them. And actually, he actually says it's chotamot for the, right, they would like use this stamp so that they would stamp people who paid or something like that. But the point is, she helped him with his thing, and she helped him do mitzvot, and she helped him, and that, you know, this is one of those views about the woman. She kind of goes with her husband wherever her husband, you know, that's how she's defined, which is a very interesting, you know, approach. And also, you know, like all these sugyas, even if you view the woman in the times of the Talmud like this, this doesn't necessarily mean the woman in our days is like this, because the woman in the Talmud was less of her own independent identity, and this fits in with all of that. What's interesting even more so is, despite that, we have the first opinion who disagrees with Rabbi Meir, who thinks the woman can be married to an Am Haaretz and still be part of this Chevra of Chaverim. So it's very interesting. Right, exactly. The fact that they accept her into the club, well, they'd have to accept her into the club because if she were touching these things, right, in other words, she was touching lots of stuff in the house, and, you know, you'd have to know, is she keeping the stuff or not? So very, very interesting.